Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide current educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children, and by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome to Education Currents. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and I'm here with Steve Simpson. He is a young adult author, and he uses the history from his abusive childhood and his story of survival to help others survive and to have hope. And I'm here to tell you that all of us have probably some cross to bear. If we haven't been abused as a child, we certainly will be as an adult. Steve's books have proven to be a fantastic tool to enable young people to get help and to have access to life-saving information, while at the same time they entertain his readers, because he is an author of a book within a book. It's an idea that's unique to him. It's a great way to get information to teenagers or young adults without embarrassing them. And I love this idea. I don't know if we should start with this question, but just explain how you came to do this idea of, I mean, it's the way Jesus did. He told stories that later, even as people would recount or see objects in that story, they would remember the lessons that he had told. So how did you come to that type of way of getting your message across?
Well, you know, if any teacher went in front of any classroom and said, hey, I have a book and it's going to help someone here who's being abused, or who here is father is an alcoholic, or who's thinking of suicide, or who's being bullied, no one's going to raise their hand. Not one kid in that class would think of raising their hand, even though one out of five kids today is a child of an alcoholic. So how do you get that life-saving information to the kid without, like you said, having that confrontation or embarrassing them? So what I did was two things. I wrote the Teenage and Young Adult Survival Handbook based on my own experience, which I'll go into in a minute. And it covers everything from, again, suicide, being a child of an alcoholic, child abuse, why you should report it, what the hesitations are, the anxieties of starting school, bullying, and from a different angle, bullying than you're used to hearing. And I even have a part of surviving the holidays in a dysfunctional home. So all that's in there. It's all written from personal perspective, how I survived. The handbook lets a young reader know that they're not alone. They're not the only one with these problems, because most think they are. And there's even a resource part of all different 800 numbers and websites to go on, from the suicide hotline, the National One-Way Switchboard. But again, how do you get that to the students, though? And what I've done is I have four young adult novels. And it's an insert, any of the four. The four novels, they're action-packed novels. They read like a movie a person would want to see, especially a young person. Some are science fiction, some are action drama, some are fantasy adventure. There's a lot of humor, especially humor that young people like. There's cool young romances. And each one of them, and the four names, of the one book's called Runaway. One is called Child's Island. One is called The World is Wrong. And finally, one is called Who Am I? And all four books have the insert, the Teenage Young Adult Survival Handbook. So now, let's say you want to approach a young person, whether it's a relative, whether it's a friend, someone, a peer that you think has these problems, and now that Christmas is coming, you can say it's a present. Well, what is this? This is why I know you like these kind of stories. And if you look at the covers of the books, they're action-packed, they're interesting. But now when you give them that, you say a prayer that they read the handbook, which is right there. Or a teacher could just say, look, guys, I'm doing a book report. I'm giving you guys a break. It's going to be a fun book to do a story on, but I want you to read all of it, including the nonfiction parts. See, the key is not the grade on the book report. The key is that you got the life-saving information to the young person without causing embarrassment, but without having a confrontation. Because if you just handed the handbook by itself, they would say what I would have said when I was young. I don't need that. What are you giving that to me for? The fact that it's inside, like one of the science fiction books, like Who Am I? Because I know you love these kind of things. I know you see movies like this. And now you've got it in their hands. If you run a youth group or you have a club, you can have a discussion on it. Even the fiction parts, as much as the characters might be dealing with aliens or street armies or hitmen or alternate realities or going to different continents that are undiscovered, all these fantastic things, but the characters themselves could be a runaway, could be a child of an alcoholic, a victim of abuse and foster care. So again, even the fiction parts ring identifiable to the readers. They relate to them. They say, that's like me, or that's like my brother, that's like my friend, and it leads up to reading the nonfiction part. And how I got about this was, like you said earlier, I myself am a child of an alcoholic. I was abused as a child. And I have to start off what kind of student I was. You heard of an A student, right, Rose? You know, an A student?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I was a Z student. Okay. I was the opposite of an A student. If there was a test, I was going to fail it. In fact, when the teacher would say, guys, this is an easy one, no one's going to fail this test, every student would turn around and look at me, and I would just smile and wave at the teacher. I was always interrupting the class. I'm laughed because I give talks to classrooms and colleges as well, and I'd be the first one to interrupt myself. I was always causing problems, always cracking jokes. And my lowest grade, I was a teacher's nightmare, by the way. I would always say the teachers would give up their tenure just not to have me in their classroom. Okay, I was like, they couldn't stand me. And I took a reason because I was constantly interrupting them. And my lowest grade is a negative 20. And you might say, how do you get a negative 20? So what happened was, now we're talking like second, third grade. I would always pick on the smart kids when they were taking a test and try to distract them. Because in my head, I thought, I was wrong, but I thought that if you were really smart, that you had the best home life, that your parents mm-hmm. were great. That was my impression, and I was jealous because I did not. So I let young kids taking a test, I would distract them, I move their hands, I push the test off and do anything to distract them. And this one kid I could distract him for anything. So I just took this whole thing and threw it off the desk and I pushed him, and the teacher said, you get back in your seat and whatever you get, I'm taking off 20 points. And I said, okay, I'll show her, I'm not gonna try, so you have to give me a zero. And instead she wrote negative 20 on the paper. Now, I started cutting school from third grade on. I would never study. I would try to cheat. I would spend about twice as long trying to figure out how to cheat on my next test than the average kid did studying. And my friends would say, why don't you just study? It would take half the time. And I go, what's the use? Because I honestly believed that even if I studied, I'd fail. Why? My father was a very abusive and violent alcoholic. Now, he was both physically and verbally abusive. And I'm not downplaying the physical stuff, because he could be talking to like I'm talking to you now. And he had like what's called a snap temper. Out of nowhere, he would hit you, punch you, push you, throw something at you, and it was unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And that's what I dealt with. But I have to tell you, the verbal abuse caused more damage than the physical. The verbal abuse did. Mm-hmm. From an early age on, I was told I was useless. I was told I was dumb. I was stupid. And I'm not going to repeat some things on your show, but you can imagine a lot of four-letter words mm-hmm. I was called as well. And most of all, the worst thing I was told was, he didn't want me. Okay? Mm-hmm. And that over and over again, I was told that. So, of course, as a result of that, I had no self-esteem. Now, the interesting thing is, though, I used to cut school at like third grade on. And I got away with it because nobody thought I was actually ditching school. But where would I go? This is the fascinating part. I would go to the library. And I would go there and read books. And I'd always call up the librarian. And I'd say, and they knew my routine. Can I have a pen and paper? And they'd give me a stack of loose leaf paper and a pen. And I would sit there and write down poems, short stories. I'd write proses. I didn't know they were called proses at the time, but I would write them. Now, this is the epitome of a kid with low self-esteem. Now, I'm cutting school at third grade. Because I feel I'm a failure already. But I'm going to the library to read books and to write stories and poems that kids that age would never be doing. And that's the epitome of a kid with a low self-esteem.
Yeah, I think that any librarian listening will feel so vindicated that little community library is saving kids like you that have this wonderful talent.
That was a safe home for me, ironically. And no one would think I'd be there. He was a prom kid, but there I was in the library. Now, from the time I was 11, I became suicidal. And I want to stress one thing to the listeners, that I always say, and I said this in the books too, I didn't want to die, I just didn't want to live. And you might say, that's the same exact thing. No, it's not. I don't like being dead. I was never dead before. And I wasn't exactly a big theologian at that age. However, I did know what it was like being alive, and it was constant pain, trauma. And I honestly believe, like most people who think of suicide, it's not going to get better. See, if I thought it was going to get better, I wouldn't have tried that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't think it would. I honestly thought, you know what, 11 years is enough of this. I can't do another 11 years. And this went on and on. Now, by the time I was 13, I ended up in foster care because I'd run away a lot. and usually stay at friends' houses, which you call a couch surfer. And one of the parents figured out when he's only here because he's been abused, why would I send him back to that house? So she called Protective Services and ended up in foster care. Now, simultaneously, I joined the self-help group, kind of like I run myself now, okay? Mm-hmm. And one of the things I discovered immediately, which got my attention, was there were smart kids in the group. I knew them from school. And I actually said to one of them, what are you doing here? You know?
Yeah.
And she laughed and said, oh, you'll figure it out, Steve. This particular individual, both parents were alcoholics. She tried suicide more times than I thought of it, but never would know that in her class, never would know that by her grades. And I discovered right off the bat something very interesting. These, quote, accomplished children, their parents would call them the same thing my father called me. And I said, well, that doesn't make sense. You're not stupid. You're not a failure. And you see, I discovered something. He says, it wasn't me. In other words, if I did great in school, he'd call me anyway. If I was a different son, if I was a daughter, if he had daughters, he would still have said the same thing. It wasn't me. It was him as an abusive alcoholic. Once I discovered that, and then the members of the group said they saw some of my writings, they said, I can't write like that. They said, you know, you're really smart. Why don't you at least try in school? So I switched schools because we were in foster care. I moved a lot and switched different schools. They didn't have my school records, knew nothing about me. So I had to learn how to study. And it wasn't overnight, but I'll tell you, within the first year, I ended up on the honor roll, okay? Mm-hmm. By the next year, I was in the National Junior Honor Society. I joined sports just to keep me busy. Great thing to keep you after school. Wrestling, get some medals up in that. MVP for track. And here's the best one. They made me student of the month. Now, not just for my class, for the entire grade. I was eighth grade then, for the entire grade. They hung my picture up in the hall as a model student. And I used to laugh and say, only 2 years before that, that same picture would have been a dartboard in the teaching faculty room. Okay? And like, what happened? Same student, same boy.
Amen. And I'm talking with Steve Simpson. He has written four novels, but embedded or with these novels is the Teenage and Young Adult Survival Handbook. And prior to the break, he was sharing with you about the verbal and physical abuse that he was going through. And I'm just listening to this and seeing how, you know, your classmates, that those people you discovered that were in the self-help groups that encouraged you to, you know, hey, you're not dumb, you're not stupid, and the library there for you, you know, little tokens of God's leading in your life.
At this new school, there was a teacher there, and what is the first brand new school, first day of it? It was a Friday, I remember that. What is the assignment? The creative writing assignment. And of course, I read it right there. And oh no, you have the whole weekend. Oh, no, you can look at it. I'm done. And she couldn't. You're amazing. I can't believe. So all these encouragements, and I could have done that. And when I was picking on these smart kids, I didn't realize I was one of them. Okay, so this is important there to people. How many other young people are walking around not knowing their abilities, not knowing you are one of the smart kids, which is some of the things I discussed in the Teenage Young Adult Survival Handbook that's in the other books. That I share these personal experiences with them because there's tons of these young people out there like that, and they just don't realize it right now. I use that same confidence to be successful in business and, of course, as a writer with four books out now. And that's my pride, you know, to discuss this. I've run a self-help group myself for years, helping individuals like I was when I was younger. I'm just sharing my experience with them. And the key to know is that, you see, I always thought, like most, that I was the only one with that problem, you know.
Yes.
And you're not, you know, but I always thought that. And that's so important. That's one of the things I stress in the books, to make them identify. I do anecdotes like I did just now. So they get it. So they know, okay, they know that, okay, wait, I relate to this guy. I'm not the only one. And that's just so important. Because another thing I want to stress to listeners is, okay, I was kind of obvious that I had problems. So it was obvious. But a lot of students hide it, like the ones I discussed would be great in school. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, they have been valedictorians who have been suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so any parent who's listening says, well, yes, my husband was abusive, but I divorced him years ago, and my son or daughter does great in school. They don't need therapy. Don't take that position, because you don't know what's going on in their head. Or they could end up in really horrible relationships because of their childhood, mm-hmm. one after the other. So I always stress to parents, if you have a child that lived through any of these things, they need some type of help mm-hmm. there. Even it's funny, even the books, people have said that, would parents read them? I said, definitely the nonfiction parts, because they would also get an idea, this is what my son thinks, that's what my daughter thinks, like that's why she does that. And they get the idea of that, which is just so important. I also want to stress to anyone listening to this, that obviously, as we all know, suicide is, the rates have gone up astronomically.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I can share with someone who might be thinking of this and knows someone that's thinking of suicide is this. You know, I have known, because of my volunteer work, many individuals who were suicidal, many, including I put myself in that number, all walks of life. And for those that have tried it, but thank God did not die, wasn't God's will, or those who have thought about it but never tried it, they all have one thing in common. And I don't mean half road, I don't mean 90%, I mean 100%. They are all glad they never did it. They never died. They never committed suicide. Why? Because things always got better. No matter how grim things were, no matter how hopeless things always got better. Now, sometimes we do have to take the first step, okay? If someone's in school, to speak to the school social worker or counselor. I used to go, I know what they're going to say. Well, I was wrong. They said a lot of things I didn't know they're going to say. There's also local community centers. And you know what? Churches are a wealth of different things inside them, like self-help groups, 12-step programs, outreach. It doesn't have to be a church that you belong to, but I recommend people to visit different ones, and usually whatever pastor will be able to direct you for free, you know, to these different things.
Mm-hmm.
There's also some very important numbers. There's the National Suicide Prevention Line, which is 1-800-273-8255, 1-800-273-8255, and the National Runaway Safe Line, which is 1-800-RUNAWAY. 1-800-RUNAWAY, because even if a young person isn't leaving the state, they just do what I did, like staying at different friends' houses regularly, that's also dangerous, because predators pick up on that, and they'll mm-hmm. zoom in on that, and offer them, quote, shelter, you know? So those
yes.
are important things to keep in mind as well.
Hey, I want to share with our listeners that they can go to your website, powerpublishingcorp.com, and it's all spelled out.
Power Publishing Corp, C-O-R-P.
Corp.
OurPublishingCorp.com.
And there's four books, Who Am I?, The World is Wrong, Child's Island, and Runaway. Which one did you write first?
Well, it's funny. All of them are ideas I had since I was a boy, believe it or not. Okay? But the first one written was Runaway, which was redone, then Child's Island, and then Who Am I? And The World is Wrong. And they're all individual stories, but I'll give a little spoiler. In some of the books, the characters do meet each other and help each other out in the fiction parts.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of them have, of course, the Teenage and Young Adult Survival Handbook in them, which is important. And that's made up, like I said, over experiences that I've had and how I've survived, and also things that I've said over the years, perhaps members of my youth group that have helped, and I put them in there as well, that I know are effective. Because the whole key is to get the young person to have hope, know they're not the only one, and to get help, to go forward, however that help is.
Yeah, I look at the young people that I come in contact with, and all of them have a number of these issues. But what age group would you recommend would be most appropriate for reading?
I would say middle school, high school, and college. Middle school straight up. Although, ironically, I've had adults read them and say, if they've lived these lives, then I got a lot from that. Like adult children of alcoholics, they love it as well. But as far as my target audience, it's middle school, high school, and college. They appreciate the most, and they really enjoy it. Those are ones that are also zero on the fiction ones. They relate to the characters. They think it's really funny. They're into the stories. Even those that don't read as much like it, because they said, this is what I like. This is original.
Yeah, and are you taking any steps to make them into audiobooks?
Not audiobooks yet. I have them, of course, as the e-books as well right now. And there was some interest also, ironically, by one of those agencies. Someone undisclosed was thinking of a movie of one of them because they liked the action so much in one of the books.
Mm-hmm.
Which was interesting. And and right now, though, I love the fact that I do have the e-books. I love the hard copy ones because you can hand it off to young people. You can leave it around. you know, for them to pick up and look at, you know, if you're, you know, say, and sometimes a parent is trying, you know, a lot of single parents say, I'm trying to get my child help. I know they've been affected by my ex, but I can't get them to. So I say, buy them and leave them on their bed. What is this? Merry Christmas. You know, they're really cool stories. Yeah, out of curiosity, they're going to look, what is this handbook in the back of this? What is this? You know, the book within the book idea. And a lot of parents will do that because they figure it's just a matter of them getting that information and open their eyes up, you know, to see.
I know that, you know, I commute a lot and I have kids that travel with me. And so the audiobooks are great. They're just a great calming thing in the car to have something to listen to other than this, the radio station that might change as you go over a mountain or whatever. And then I also have, I deal with a number of children that are dyslexic. And a child who's dyslexic, not only have they, you know, if they've suffered verbal abuse or physical abuse, then they also know that they can't do what all the other kids are doing when it comes to reading. And so I just, you know, if you think about it, that's just a little plug for that person that may be more audio.
Definitely a point there as well. Definitely a point there. You made me think of something. You said dyslexic too, and kids with different issues. I want to cover something very important fast too. You hear a ton of talk of bullying today in schools, and a lot of unfortunate suicides have stemmed from them. And I have to say this, and this is a general statement, I know that everyone fits in this category, so I'll say that at the beginning. But many of the children who are bullied, who take it to such extreme, you ever ask the question, why did that one take it so seriously but that one didn't? What was the difference, these two kids? And not, a lot of times it's because that child is being bullied at home. I call it the domestic bully, the abusive parent. So what happens is, you know, you ever have them in school or sometimes even at work, you're making a joke to different people, tease them, but there's that one that always overreacts. And you say, come on, I said to everybody, why do you have to get so serious for it? Because that person might abuse at home. And by the time they get to school or work, they've had it. And now you're doing it to them. So their skin, so to speak, is really thin as opposed to the average person. So when you see sometimes a child really reacting like extreme, when you say, hey, was that bit of an insult? It could be because they're having it at home. I did that. I mean, kid would say something, I'd swing at him right away. And like, whoa, that, and the teacher would say, that was really uncalled for. I know he should have said that, but your reaction, what they didn't know was that I was being ripped apart by my father all night long, even in the morning sometimes, the way to school. And that was like the straw that broke the camel's back. And that's so important to think about that. We also have November, which is Natural Runaway Awareness Month. And I want to also point out that this happens a lot, too. A child runs away. They get the child home, and they run away again, and they think this child has problems. What they don't realize is most runaways are running away because they're being abused. And you're labeling the child. And I say they're not running away, they're escaping, you know, and that's the term I use. So we need to be aware of those things as well, you know, the denial inside of households. You know that old line, I don't know why they did it. You probably do.
Wow, what a great note to end this show on. And I just feel like I've only just begun. If you want to know more, please go to Steve Simpson's website, powerpublishingcorp.com. It's all spelled out just like you hear it. And I have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.